We seek refuge in Allah from the accursed Satan. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Salam and hello and Salam and hello and welcome to our audience all over the world to another edition of our program Islamic Studies. This program is being broadcast to you live by Sahar Universal Network, live from the Islamic Republic of Iran and from the holy city of Qum, and I'm your expert host Ejaz Hussain. The topic today is a new topic which we are going to cover on Sufism, on Irfan and Sufism in particular. And we're going to do that with an expert in our with the expert in our studio, but we'll do that after we mention the fact that we want to, on behalf of Sahar and the team here, we wish to congratulate Muslims all over the world on the occasion of the 10-day Fajr celebrations which are now occurring here in Iran. And this is of course in the light of the fact of the celebration of the victory of the revolution in 1979. Of course, as when Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, arrived here in Iran and changed events for the next decade or so, he certainly mentioned a letter that was sent to the then Soviet Union and to the presidium of the Soviet, Gorbachev, in order to invite him towards Islam. And in that letter, he does mention something about the aspects of Sufism. And we want to discuss that in a little bit more depth as to why he mentioned this in his letter and what significance it does have in terms of understanding Islam. So we're going to do that after a short break, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Amongst the topics of elite circles in Islamic studies is Irfan, mysticism or Gnosticism, which at the very onset may seem vague, complex and deep, filled with specialized terms and vocabularies of wayfarers and wine, inspiring romanticism and awe. But kept at a distance from reality in the minds of the masses is the central theme and essence of Islam. If mentioned in common conversation, the names bring regard, respect, or sometimes distance for those who refer to its topics. However, if analyzed, taking the lives of our Imams, the most beloved of their companions, the mystical poets or renowned Gnostics as archetypes of this elite way of life, we see common attitudes, behaviors and themes woven through the blessed lives of these dignitaries, stripping all pretentious air out of its aura. In their journey towards their Lord, these people were renowned for replacing all selfish or worldly loves with the love of their Lord, bringing about freedom in the face of power, breaking the shackles of materialism with a continuous war against the self, replacing conflicts with peace, and bringing patience and courage in the face of difficulty. The resulting reflections were simplicity of life, love of humanity and a deep respect of all Allah's creation. In the face of power, hunger and oppression, when combating economic and social conflicts, when dealing equitably with the scarceness of natural resources, the extinction of wildlife and the increasing scope of the ozone crisis, is there really any solution to be found but returning back to the focus on our Lord? Traveling back from the world of luxuries to relationships, enhancing our sincerity and migrating from greed to sufficiency and contentment. It is no wonder that Imam Khomeini considered it an elixir for the issues of the modern world.
Welcome back, viewers. Thanks very much for staying with us. You're watching Islamic Studies, and I'm your host, Ejaz Hussain. If you have any comments or criticisms you'd like to make on the program, there will be some number subtitled on the screen as well as an email. So please do try to get in touch with us if you feel about any issue that we're speaking about and would like to participate in the program. We'd love to hear from you. I'd like to introduce my guest on this particular subject, and that is Dr. Sikalishvar, from the Holy Seminaries of Qum. I believe you're a student, but you're also a qualified medical doctor, yes. I believe, as well.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you, brother? Are you okay, Inshallah?
Thank you very much, yes, and thanks very much for participating on this program.
Thank you very much.
Now, we did have something on the narration there, which spoke about the father of the revolution, Imam Khomeini, God bless his great soul, where it says that he regards this aspect of mysticism, Irfan, and Sufism, and we are going to define all these terms. Hopefully you're going to define them all for us in terms of what they mean, in terms of maybe their differences as well in their uses theoretically and practically. But what we want to look at is that he talks about it as the elixir for solving many of the world's problems at the moment, that we are the crisis that we are facing, that humanity is facing as a whole globally. So I believe that you wish to take a paragraph from the letter that was sent to the President Gorbachev at the time of the Soviet Union. This was now 1989. This was towards the end of, shall we say, Imam Khomeini's rule, if you like, in terms of leading the Islamic Republic. And he sent this letter to invite Gorbachev to Islam. So would you like to quote this paragraph? This will hopefully lead us into the topic we wish to speak about today, which is going to be Sufism.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I also want to offer my congratulations on these auspicious days.
Thanks very much indeed.
Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh called these days 34 years ago Yawmullah,
the days of God.
And the day in Irfan doesn't, it's not referring to the 24-hour period. It has a deeper meaning in Irfan. Even the infallibles are called Yawmullah. And the reason is because Yawm literally means manifestation. Okay. Now, the Imams are manifestations of Allah.
Of course they are.
Those days, Allah was manifesting maximally in Iran 34 years ago, where now Islamic law, Sharia, everything's coming. It's a new dawn.
Well, you remind me of the famous headline that came up in the Guardian newspaper at that time, right at the outset of the revolution. It said that after 1400 years, Islam is back. I was wondering what was there before 1400 years. So, you know, what you're saying in terms of this Yawmullah is very, very sad, because even the enemies recognize the fact that something different had happened here.
Yes, you're right.
Excellent.
Concerning the letter, which you're right in saying that this was a letter to Gorbachev, but primarily or essentially it was a letter to the West, inviting the West to Islam.
Interesting.
On the outside, though, it was a letter addressed to the then president.
Yes, it was a means, a vehicle by inviting the world.
The world, especially the Western. Yes, that's right. And I remember almost a year ago, we did discuss this letter, but in another angle, if you remember. But we never managed to...
I mean, this is an important point that you raised there, because the experts at the time who looked at this letter in the West said that this was the first definitive proof that Allah exists.
Right. Yes, I remember you saying that. Yes, mashallah.
So, it's incredible. Please carry on with the paragraph.
Yes, here, I'll just read the last paragraph.
Please.
Imam was naming a number of philosophers and mystics.
That's correct,
paying them Avicenna, Sohrawardi, one by one Farabi, and then Mullah Sadr.
Mullah Sadr, yes.
And then this is the last paragraph now. He said to Gorbachev, I shan't tire you further and shall not name books of the Gnostics, the Urafa, especially those of Muhyiddin ibn Arabi.
Muhyiddin ibn Arabi.
Because assuming you desire to be informed of the discussions and writings of this great man or personality, now with the other scholars like Mullah Sadr, Farabi, Avicenna, he would say, tell your scholars to research those books.
That's right. I mean, there was an invitation given to the elite of Russia.
In Russia.
To come to Iran and study these.
No, in relation to Mullah Sadr and Farabi and Avicenna, Imam said, tell your scholars to study these books.
Just study them there.
And then with Mullah Sadr, ask your greater professors to analyze Mullah Sadr's
book. That was the distinction.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
But here, things change now. With Muhyiddin ibn Arabi, the tone alters a bit.
Right.
He says, because assuming you desire to be informed of the discussions and writings of this great personality, you must send a number of your genius specialist experts who have a strong basis in such matters to Qom.
Right, so we need a special type of expertise needed to understand this particular work.
And they have to come to Qom.
And they have to come
no
to Qom.
No longer will it suffice for them to study it alone in, you know, in Russia or anywhere in the West.
Interesting.
To Qom, so that after several years, with reliance upon Allah, with tawakkul upon Allah, they can become aware of the depth and thinner than hair delicateness of the stations of ma'rifa, gnosis.
Gnosis, yes.
For without making such a journey, awareness of such knowledge is not feasible. So this is a big statement. And it's not anyone saying this. It's someone, Imam Khomeini, not only was he a mujtahid in fiqh in his 20s, he was a mujtahid in ethics, in irfan, in philosophy in his 20s. Most of his books in Ijtihadi Irfan was written before his marriage, which he married at 27. And not all mujtahids in fiqh are mujtahids in aqa'id. Not all mujtahids in the sharia are mujtahids in the tariqah.
Well, I mean, this is the thing about Imam Khomeini, which reminds me very much of our masum imams. If we go back to them, in terms of, you know, Imam Ali alayhi salam and the imams subsequent after that, that he reminds me especially of Imam Jafar as-Sadiq alayhi salam, that these were the kind of polymaths, these men of great genius who are able to you know, be experts in a wide range of fields. I mean, there's a multi-dimensional aspect to Imam Khomeini, which is very difficult for the Western mind to grasp, you know, because to be honest, in the Western mind, there's the paradigm of putting everything in boxes. But Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul, was outside the box, and that becomes difficult to understand. And this is where the letter is, you know, really... He's asking for a special kind of expertise, a kind of genius to come and understand the works of Ibn Arabi. And we know that how difficult that is. And, you know, asking them to study it here in Qom. But then this now leads us into this aspect of Irfan, because this is what beautifully combines the personality of Imam Khomeini. That the great characteristic of him was that he was combining politics on the one hand, which, you know, is easily understood. But with spiritualism, how do you get these two combinations to work? I mean, how do you get the one who is the Gnostic, the one who is the lover of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? And we know that this has degrees of faith, degrees of you know, truth in them, which, you know, you actually try to achieve this in the world of the angels. But to have it here in this world and to achieve it in this world, and to be at the same time a ruler, like our masum imams, our infallible imams, is really incredible. So try to put us into perspective in terms of that.
Well, we have one reality, and that's Islam. This one reality has many dimensions
absolutely,
to it.
Absolutely.
These dimensions are one and the same to one another, but to different capacities. It's one reality. Nothing is outside Islam. What we're seeing today after 34 years is mainly the fiqhi, sharia manifestations of the revolution. The sharia is one dimension, of Islam. It's one. But there are many other deeper, more esoteric dimensions of Islam. And those manifestations of Islam are yet to be realized. They haven't been realized yet. I remember in the beginning of the revolution, Imam Khomeini was giving tafsir of Suratul Hamd, the first chapter of the Holy Quran. And they stopped it. They wouldn't let it to continue after five lessons. It was far beyond people's understanding. You see? If that were to continue to today, that line, we may have experienced more of the esoteric fruits of the revolution, but we haven't yet. But we are, inshallah, we will experience them. But so far, with the success we have up to now, after 34 years, although it's been very successful, it's only been successful primarily in one dimension of the revolution.
Sure.
Yes. And I remember once Ayatollah Khomeini, when he was speaking to the non-Iranian students in Rome, he said, our main aim is to export the esoteric, ethical dimension of Islam.
Right.
Islam has a political side, yes. Mm. Its politics is one and the same as its ethics, its Irfan, because it's one reality.
Yes. But it's the politics of justice, though.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
But, yes. But now the point is here, in this letter, why did Imam focus on Ibn Arabi,
right,
who's a Sufi?
Who's a Sufi. This is what leads on to our topic today.
Muslim Sufi. Now, it doesn't matter whether he was a Sunni or a Shia, although Imam himself, Ayatollah Hassanzadeh Amuli, Hafidhahullah, has proved that he was a Shia Sufi.
Right.
But that doesn't matter. Because
that's not important.
We'll explain that later. Because
yeah.
Sunnism and Shiism, they are in the realm, these titles, they're confined in the realm of the Sharia.
Exactly.
In the realm of the Tariqah, it doesn't know of Sunnis and Shias.
No.
These titles shouldn't be used in the realm of Tariqah, in the realm of Sufism, in the realm of Irfan.
Right.
And that's why it's even, you know, our Sunni brothers, everyone says that all Tariqahs, all spiritual paths are traced back to Amirul Mu'mineen. Mm. They all say that.
That's right.
You know,
this is very interesting what you're pointing out, because in Sufism, no matter, regardless, as you say, of the Sharia difference between different schools of thought, but it's very interesting that in Sufism, Imam Ali alayhi salam is regarded as the highest spiritual head, if you like, of this tariqah.
Right,
because at the end of the day, we're talking about the relationship between the human and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
But I'll speak more about that, because when I say these titles don't exist in tariqah, it may be abused sometimes by some people. But we'll come to that, inshallah, another time or another day.
Right.
Okay. So, yes, so this is important, that this Muslim Sufi, Ibn Arabi, why was Imam, you know, adamant to mention him? Because, you know, at that time in Qom, many people, although they weren't learned in Irfan, they didn't study the classical texts of Irfan with the proper ustads, with the proper mentors. And that's why they quickly came to the conclusion, and they were of the belief, and this was a predominant trend in Qom at that time, when Imam's letter came out, they thought Ibn Arabi was a kafir.
Yes, there was that.
At best, to be most polite, they would say he was a Sunni Muslim. But you see, this is problematic. But Imam said, this is, you want to invite the West to Islam, study this aspect of Islam too. Because, you know, you can't ask the West to study the Sharia. It won't be that effective. Because the Sharia, innately and essentially, intrinsically, you can't, you know, unite two Sharias with one another. You can't unite, you know, Christianity, the Sharia in Christianity with the Sharia in Islam. Intrinsically, there are differences between them. It's the letter of the law. It's impossible. They have to stick to their letter. We stick to ours.
Absolutely.
But there are dimensions in Islam where that unity can be acquired to some extent.
But it's at a completely different level.
Yes, it's more metaphysical, if
more
you like.
Yes. So can you now begin by defining for us these terms now? Like Irfan, mysticism, because they're not easily understood.
Yes.
You know, even the layman has difficulty understanding these terms. What do they really mean?
Yes.
And Sufism as a tradition.
Right.
So if you could go through them one by one.
Right,
let's start with Irfan to
Irfan.
Begin with.
Yes, yes.
So what do we mean by that?
Well, in the introduction that the sister read out, there she used mysticism and Gnosticism.
Gnosticism, yes.
In reference to being synonymous to Irfan.
Right.
And that's okay, that's correct also. What we mean by Irfan is mysticism and the Gnosticism. I'll come to the definition in a minute.
Sure.
Now, I would like to add just Sufism to these synonyms.
Right, okay.
For now. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, or maybe another time, I'll explain the very subtle differences, according to some scholars, including Imam Khomeini, where Sufism does differ.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so minor.
Minor, right.
For now, we want to regard Sufism, Irfan, mysticism, and Gnosticism all as one. Mm-hmm. It's one reality here. They're all synonyms of one another. And also, I want you to regard them as sciences.
Right.
Not a cult, not a religion, not an order, not yet. Mm-hmm. They're none of, it's not. It's a science. Just like any other, like medicine. It's a science which has a collection of principles. These principles have to be evaluated. These principles are extrapolated from different sources. It's important what the sources are. Most Muslims regard the Quran as a source, but then there are some divisions which regard the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt as a source of extrapolating these principles of the science of Sufism or Irfan.
Sure.
Others regard other traditions and so on and so forth. So there are differences there. But for now, it's synonymous. So for now, I'll use Irfan as one term, but I'm referring to all of them so far. Now, what does Irfan mean? Here, it has a literal definition and a technical definition. Now, naturally, the technical definition is what we concerns us more.
More, yes.
But I want to go through the literal definition because it'll be a good preface to understanding the technical definition once we come to it.
Sure.
Irfan is a master, as we say in Arabic. In English grammar, we call it a gerund.
Gerund, yes.
And it's derived from the lexeme Arafa. Arafa, Irfan, which is a gerund, it's extracted, but it means knowing, literally, or recognizing. And that's what it means. Now here, in the Quran, in chapter, if I can find it, chapter 12, verse 58, Irfan, Arafa, which comes from the lexeme Arafa, is used in the literal sense in this verse of the Holy Quran. And the verse is in relation to when the brothers of Yusuf, Prophet Joseph, alayhi salam, when the brothers came in the presence of Prophet Joseph himself. وَجَاءَ إِخْوَةُ يُوسُفَ فَدَخَلُوا عَلَيْهِ The brothers of Yusuf came to him and entered upon the presence of Yusuf.
Yusuf.
Yes. فَعَرَفَهُمْ عَرَفَهُمْ He, referring to Prophet Yusuf, recognized them. Yes. وَهُمْ لَهُ مُنْكِرُونَ But they, in relation to Yusuf, didn't recognize him. Here, the word مُنْكِرُونَ is used, which is from inkar. They denied him. Now look, this is a very subtle point here. Yusuf alayhi salam saw the brothers. The brothers saw Yusuf. They both saw one another. But Yusuf recognized them, but they didn't recognize.
No, that's fine. Just hold on to that point we have to go away for a short break. We'll be right back, viewers, with the continuation of this part. So we're suspending you for a couple of minutes. So we'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back, viewers. Thanks very much for staying with us. Doctor, you were mentioning very nicely this aspect of the meeting between the brothers and Prophet Yusuf, peace be upon him.
One
has recognized the other and the other denies Prophet Yusuf. Now, the subtle difference that you wanted to point out in the language of what is being used here, please carry on. Thank you.
So, so where were we? So in chapter 12, verse 58.
Right.
The brothers of Yusuf came to him. They entered upon his presence. فَعَرَفَهُمْ
Yes.
That was the point here.
Yes.
The literal definition of Irfan, as we see in the Quran.
Right.
فَعَرَفَهُمْ Prophet Yusuf recognized them.
Right.
وَهُمْ They, lahu in relation to him, him. Prophet Yusuf, were munkirun.
Munkirun.
Now the thing is this, Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam saw them. The brothers also saw Prophet Yusuf.
Yes.
There's no problem in seeing.
No.
There are two parties here. Mm. They're both seeing one another. Mm. But only one of them recognized who the other party was, whilst the other party didn't know who this person that they are seeing is. Now this is very subtle. Why? Because this same relationship, don't forget, talking about Irfan now,
yes,
the literal
Irfan,
dimension.
Yes, yes.
This same relationship exists between Haqq, truth, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and people, khalq, creation, people. Two parties here. Allah on the one side, who is truth, haqq,
and creation,
creation
on the other.
People, creation in general, khalq. Allah, of course, sees creation.
Yes.
We see Allah too. And I'll come to a verse in the Quran which speaks about that.
Right.
Everyone sees Allah. But Allah recognizes us whilst we deny Him. Now, what does that mean? Chapter 2, 115. Mm-hmm. فَأَيْنَمَا تُوَلُّوا فَثَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ.
Right.
Whichever way you turn, there is the face of Allah.
There is the face of Allah.
Now,
yes.
This Waj, according to some scholars, are the attributes of Allah.
Yes.
Whatever is, water, sun, moon, people, is a manifestation of Allah's attributes.
Yes.
Some people refer to that wajhullah as the essence of Allah. Whatever is Allah manifesting. Kulla yawmin huwa fi shan. Every manifestation that exists, kulla yawmin huwa, it's Him. This huwa referring to Allah's essence. Fi shan, it's Him in dimension. Whatever is Allah in dimension. Whatever is a manifestation of Allah. Now, here, what does it mean that we see Allah but don't recognize Him? It's because when we see the sun, the moon, the person, water, book, everything, we get drowned in the physical dimension of it. Whereas the verse says, whichever way you turn, there is the face of Allah. But we get drowned in the worldly aspect of it, preventing us, because whatever exists in this world, la ayatun li ulil albab, whatever is a sign, a conduit to Allah. Because creation is a
In other words, what you're pointing out from this very interesting definition from two very eloquent verses of the Quran is that we don't see the wisdom behind the physical attribute of what we are looking at.
Yes.
We are only blinded by just seeing, like I see you physically.
Yes.
But you are yourself a manifestation of the power of creation.
Yes.
And it is, I have to look beyond you, in other words, to see the real reality.
You have to get
of what the existence means.
Yes. You have to get rid of the additional features.
Yeah,
and
I have
parameters.
To get rid of all this adoration around
As
it.
As Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam says, At-tawhidu isqatul izafat.
Very nice.
Tawhid is the elimination, the taking out of the additional things.
Of the additional things.
The sun, the moon, whatever creation, you take out its length, size, shape, worldly aspect, ugly aspect, all the things, you get to what? The essence. That essence is who?
Who? And that's the truth.
Whatever is a manifestation of that who, of Allah's attributes. Kulla yawmin huwa. Kulla yawmin hu fi shan. Every manifestation is Him. That who, according to some traditions, translations, at play. It's Him at play. It's Him at work. Or it's Him in dimension.
Interesting.
But nothing is outside Allah's jurisdiction. It's all Allah acting Allah-li. Now, in the same way that the brothers of Yusuf, they saw Yusuf, but they didn't recognize the essence, who he is, but they saw him. We too, wherever we turn, there's the face of Allah, but we don't see Allah. We deny Him on a spiritual denial, not the physical denial. and on the Sharia basis, we all accept Allah. But you know, when we come to spirituality, now we're expected to elevate. We have to now see Allah, not with the physical eye. We have to ascend the metaphysical.
Well, this is an aspect that we have to mention as well, just briefly for the viewers, but I'm sure you'll take it into another session.
Yes.
That this description of Arfan, as you are describing it, from the Holy Quran, from the Holy Text, this is a means, a vehicle, a tool by which we have to seek perfection in this world.
Yes.
And Allah has given us the means to do this.
Yes, yes.
But as you say, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, in this century, has given us the vehicle by which we can try to achieve to some extent, according to our capacity, this perfection.
Yes, yes.
So that's an important point to mention, but you can carry on the definition.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. So here it's a special kind of knowing.
Yes.
Now we come to the technical definition.
Now the technical definition, yes.
Now for the technical definition, I chose a definition that Sheikh Baha'i, who was a very important scholar of 4 or 5 centuries ago. Sheikh Baha'i is a scholar who all the scholars from all denominations, from all aspects of Islam, be they the fuqaha, be they the mutakallimin, the theologians, be they the urafa, the Gnostics, everyone accepts this figure. And he was expert in all fields in the seminary sciences.
Another genius.
He really was a genius, And he has provided a definition of Irfan, which I've translated parts of this definition for
us.
He says that Irfan, although in the Arabic here, the word he uses is tasawwuf.
Tasawwuf.
Which is Sufism.
Ah, yes, from Suf.
Yes. Now he's now saying, he's defining Sufism now.
Sufism.
As I say, for now, we regard Sufism, Irfan, all as one thing. So it's a science. Now, a science of what, we'll come to in a minute. So, Sheikh Baha'i says that this tasawwuf, Sufism or Irfan, is a science within which is discussed the divine essence of unity.
Right. The divine essence of unity.
That essence of unity is discussed.
Right.
Which means that, that who, if you like.
That
although
who.
This who, this him, which is a pronoun, but it's a name of Allah.
It's a proper noun
rather than a pronoun.
Right.
We can speak about that afterwards. There's a lot of debate. I don't want to confuse everyone
including
myself.
Let's just continue with the logic of your argument at the moment.
So it's a science within which is discussed that essence of unity and his names and attributes of Allah, in the sense that each of their manifestations leads one to the divine essence. The manifestations of Allah's names and attributes, in the sense of how this leads one to Allah's divine essence, this is what is discussed in Irfan. Now, we will come to examples too with time, but this is one of the main parts of the definition, because whatever is a manifestation of Allah's attributes. We spoke about that a bit before. Then it says it's also a science within which is discussed the manner by which the people of Allah, Ahlullah, Ahlullah. Maybe you can translate that in a better way.
But
do you know of any other? Ahlullah, maybe the people of Allah, that's what comes.
The people of Allah.
This Ahlullah, Sheikh Baha'i is saying this now. The manner by which the people of Allah return towards Allah. You know the verse, Inna Lillah.
Inna Lillah, yes.
We're all Allah's.
Yes.
Whatever is Allah's, is in unity with Allah.
Allah.
That's the first part of this definition.
Listen.
That everything leads us to the divine essence.
Yes.
Wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
Yes.
And we're all returning to him.
To him.
You see? This second part now, which is more of a practical dimension of this definition, the manner by which the people of Allah return. How do people return to Allah? Irfan, Sufism tells you how.
Yes.
Okay. And the mechanism of wayfaring, suluk, and striving together with their etiquettes and disciplines.
Right. Yes. Just hold on to that point, Dr. Yes. Saraskar, because we just want to come back to tie up the program now.
Sure, yes.
But we're just going away for a short break, viewers, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks. Welcome back, viewers. Thanks very much for staying with us. Dr. Saraskar, we have got 8 minutes left.
Right.
And we want to try and conclude this these definitions in this session that we, at least we can go into a much more in-depth discussion of what the letter was referring to in terms of this tariqa, this way of spreading Islam throughout the world. Very interesting. I mean, I must say, I'm completely at a mystical level with you now. You've taken me to a completely different level here. So carry on with these definitions so that we now get into the argument of what Sufism is.
Sufism is, right. So in this definition which we read of tasawwuf or Sufism, there's a theoretical dimension and there's a practical dimension to this definition. In the practical dimension, the Urafa believe that the aim in this life is to acquire communion.
Interesting, because that's an aspect in Christianity as well, isn't it?
Well, if you break it up, that com means with, union, that's unity.
Exactly.
We want to acquire unity with Allah. Mm. Everyone's in unity with Allah. Mm. Nothing is outside Allah, that's impossible. Mm. Whatever is in unity with Allah. But awareness, recognition, irfan, that we are in unity with Allah, that's important.
Well, this is what you're referring to in that verse with Prophet Yusuf, aren't you?
Yes, exactly.
This is this recognition we want to get to.
Yes, well done.
Exactly.
But now, the Urafa say, in order to acquire that communion, that unity with Allah, with awareness, one has to go through a number of spiritual steps, ranks, levels, until one acquires gnosis with a G, that irfan of the truth, acquires gnosis of Allah's names and attributes, where one now sees Allah. And we have traditions where it speaks of seeing Allah. What does that mean?
Yeah.
What does smelling or being a recipient to the divine aroma mean? We have it in traditions.
Yes.
What does touching Allah mean? These can't be interpreted in the physical sense.
No.
These are referring to, now, this wayfaring to Allah has been given a number of names. Suluk is one of them.
Right.
Mi'raj is one of
them.
That's right. Something which is open to everyone, that ascension.
Yes.
Suluk meaning wayfaring. Mm. Tariqa is path.
Path.
This is also another synonym.
Yes.
This way to acquiring unity with Allah, that gnosis, acquiring that understanding and gnosis of Allah, that path to acquire that is also called tariqa. Now the Urafa didn't just bring these terms. All these terms exist in the Quran. For example, in relation to tariqa, there's one verse, I think it's in chapter 72.
Right.
It reads, "Wa an law istaqamu ala tariqa," if they stay steadfast
on the path.
On the path. Well done. "La asqaynahum ma'an ghadaqa," we shall satiate them with.
They will be fulfilled with contentment.
Yes, we shall satiate them with the water of abundance.
Water of abundance. But that's not the physical water
Exactly. That in the introduction.
That's the thirst that needs to be.
Yes, in the introduction.
Quenched
it spoke
for
about,
all time.
It spoke about wine in the introduction.
Interesting. If that's from the Surah Jinn, actually. That's very nice.
Yes. And in other places, وَسَقَاهُمْ رَبُّهُمْ شَرَابًا تَهُورًا, where Allah will satiate them with, the Lord will satiate them with a pure wine.
Ah.
Now, what does this wine mean? As you said, it can't be the physical wine.
This is interesting because the poets refer to this many times in their mystical poetry about this wine.
This wine.
But it's not what we physically mean.
No, of course not, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has given a commentary on what this wine is referring to.
Right.
Yes.
Please.
We'll come to that another time.
Right.
But since we want to just finish,
yes.
This point is important. that this tariqa is the way to Allah in the spiritual realm.
Right.
The way to Allah in the canonical sense is called the Sharia.
That's right.
And
yes.
That's the letter of the law.
Letter of the law.
But we have something called, and we have it in the Quran, but we also have it in more specific terms in the traditions where the word tariqa is used, where the Holy Prophet says, tariqa is my actions, referring to ethical, spiritual norms and practices, the spiritual mantras, and the noble ethical traits. Okay? This is tariqa. Tariqa to what? The way, the spiritual route to acquiring that gnosis of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
True.
Irfan, Sufism, is the science of tariqa.
Interesting. The science of the path.
The science of the path. That's, if we want to give a definition of Irfan, of Sufism, it's the science of tariqa. It's tariqaology.
Tariqaology.
Yes.
Very nice.
Now, in the Sharia, in relation to the halals and the harams, we all follow the most learned in fiqh.
That's right, as in terms of our mujtahid, yes, taqlid of our mujtahid.
Yes, and that's a rational concept.
Right.
That we want to abide on a par with Allah's laws in the Sharia. We go to the most learned, and therefore, that's in the realm of Sharia.
Sharia. But
now, as I said,
in terms of gnosis,
not all mujtahids in fiqh are mujtahids in irfan. They may not even be very advanced in gnosis. They may have never acquired that gnosis of Allah. It's possible.
In other words, what you're saying, they may be very good lawyers.
Yes. Yes.
But in terms of being communion or in terms of being spiritual beings.
Yes, it's not a prerequisite.
Not a prerequisite,
some
but it
of
needs
them
the
were.
Ranks.
Some of them were. I mean, the late Ayatollah Bajjat. Rahmatullah alayhi, he was a faqih, and also he was a true
mystic.
Sufi, a true mystic. And today the likes of Ayatollah Hassanzada Amali, hafadahullah, I mean, we don't have many people like that.
Yes. That's true.
Tariqaology, that's what we're all speaking about.
Right.
Now, in the Sharia, it's about halal and harams, and we follow someone who is learned in that.
Right.
In tariqaology, who do we follow there?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Now, first of all, is it wajib to follow the tariqa? No.
No.
It's not wajib. But if you want to become more and more perfect, if you want your perfection, your degree of perfection to go higher, then it would be rationally necessary.
Necessary, yes.
That which is wajib is the Sharia. That which is canonically wajib, it's a minimum. It's a step one, but it's an essential step one.
Yes.
It's a step without which
you can't do the next one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or if you do it, it will be deficient at least.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
So the Sharia is important. And don't forget, Islam is one reality. You see, essentially, the Sharia, Tariqa, and Hariqa, which we'll speak maybe next week, it's all one reality. They're just dimensions of this one reality.
Interesting.
They're not mutually exclusive. The Tariqa is the inner dimension.
Well,
of the
Dr. Sekar Shwar, thank you very much indeed for this today's session. It's been a great introduction to a very, very broad science, I would say. It's it's not easy to follow, but we've given a very good definition, tariqaology. And that's where we're going to start from next session, because we're going to look at the science of this path, and that's what we're going to speak about next week. So viewers, I hope that you've really enjoyed this session in terms of the introduction to Irfan and Sufism, but we'll speak about it next week. Wa assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It just leaves me to say, may the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for watching today, and goodbye. Thank you, sir. Thank you.